and welcome to Inside Education. You can visit us online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
We felt it was very didactic, very unreflective, didn't provoke us to reflect and didn't stimulate our own learning. It was very much a content-driven programme.
We'll hear how one man who spent much of his career organising professional development for teachers was dissatisfied with the content of his own HDIP programme in the 1970s. But first I bring you my final interview from the Computer Education Society of Ireland's annual conference 2012. Fred Boss is the man who leads EdChat IE. He works for the National Centre for Technology and Education, and he first told me what that work involves.
Yeah, I'm working in the CPD side of things with NCT. CPD is Continuing Professional Development, so basically what I do is I'm pushing out courses for teachers, either online or face-to-face through the education centres, and online to our own NCT Learning Online environment.
And how have those courses changed now compared to, say, what would have been offered when NCTE was established?
They're radically different in that they're dealing with a lot of Web 2 stuff. Everything now is more or less on the internet. Saying that, we still push out the programmes, especially for beginners, where they can actually download stuff and use it in the school with the kids. And that's kind of a nice kind of safety net for teachers as well, because it's a hands-on thing that they can do. And the big change, I'd say, would be online completely. That's a major change, because teachers are kind of moving into it, and they're moving into it quickly as well.
So which kind of courses then are most popular among teachers?
There's a lot still of beginner courses that would be very popular, because people are rusty, or they just don't know, or they lack a bit of confidence and they're trying to kind of get to grips with things. Interactive whiteboards are a major thing as well. Everybody wants to know what's on with their interactive whiteboard, how to use it, what's the latest thing, that kind of stuff. So there's always a kind of call for that as well.
You're presenting here at the CESI conference. What's the subject of your talk?
Yeah, I did that this morning. I think I dazed a lot of people. It was about personal learning networks or professional learning networks, what I use, what other people use, and how you can use it yourself, and maybe giving them some ideas, and also trying to get some ideas back from them.
So what is a professional learning network?
God, that's me tripping over my feet when I'm on the internet, basically. It's kind of, I fall over something, I say, oh, hello, and someone picks you up and says, I give you a hand with that, and that's some educator in America or Australia or Switzerland or wherever they are. And we're basically just swapping ideas all the time. And you just meet happy accidents all the time, just swapping ideas about the same thing, and you build your network of more and more and more and more people.
And what medium, then, do you use for these interactions? Are you talking about Twitter, or are you talking about something else?
Twitter would be my main one. I'm a Twitter addict when it comes to that kind of thing, so definitely Twitter. But yeah, it's sometimes online courses. You meet people doing that. There's a lot of free online courses out there. There's MOOCs, which are out there, MOOCs, which are kind of multi-online courses where you get thousands of people participating.
And how can people find out about these free online courses?
Basically, type it into Google. That's all I ever do. And then what I would also find out is that when I'm on Twitter, a lot of links come through Twitter to my own kind of connections and people I follow and who follow me. So I find a lot of information out that way.
One of the initiatives that you've taken on Twitter is setting up EdChat. Can you say a little bit about what that involves?
Yeah, EdChat IE is a weekly meeting online on Twitter for 1 hour from 8:30 to 9:30 on a Monday night. That's basically Irish educators, the Irish educators from primary, post-primary and third level. I'll come on and we talk about a topic that has been decided on by the group. And when I say by the group, that could also involve Americans and Australians and Canadians as well, because people vote and turn up from anywhere in the world to talk about the same thing.
What kind of topics have you had on in recent weeks?
Last November we had a nice debate on the new NCCA ideas for the junior set reform. And recently we've had things such as how to make homework fun and interesting.
So if somebody who is new to Twitter, or maybe who has never been on Twitter, wants to find out what is available on EdChat, how can they go about it?
Basically, if you on Twitter, go into the search box, type in hashtag EdChatIE and press enter, and it'll all just open up in front of you.
Because of your work with the NCTE, Fred, you obviously see a lot of applications of technology around the country. What has impressed you most over the last year?
What's impressed me most is the growing realisation by teachers that sometimes it's a good thing to let the kids just go and they'll find all the bugs and they'll help you fix things, because your teacher okay, you're grand, you're great, you know your subject if you're in secondary, you know the curriculum if you're in primary, but you mightn't know what this button does, that button does, how to use something on the internet. The kids will. And if they don't, they'll suss it out in seconds. And they'll tell you, you don't have to know everything. That's the main thing.
And that was Fred Boss from the National Centre for Technology and Education. He was speaking to me at the annual SESI conference earlier this year. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website insideed.com. On the 31st of December 2011, Seamus Cannon retired as director of the Blackrock Education Centre. He had been in the position for over 30 years. I met up with Seamus to find out what he had learned over his 30 years at the helm of one of Ireland's longest established education centres. On this week and next week's programme, I'll bring you the interview I conducted with Seamus. Next week, I'll bring you Seamus's thoughts on teacher learning, professional development for teaching, and what makes the Blackrock Education Centre distinctive. But this week, I focus on the man himself, his interests and his influences. Although his parents were teachers, Seamus himself was a reluctant teacher. On getting his degree in 1971, he considered becoming a journalist with the Irish Press. But as a fallback position, he went to a school to inquire about HDIP hours with a view to doing the HDIP. He takes up the story from there.
For some reason, I just found the atmosphere and the interaction, immediate or informal interaction with some students there, just caught my imagination. And it seemed very clear to me that that was what I should do next, just try to become a teacher. So I cancelled the interview with Tim Pat Coogan, as it was at the time in the Irish Press, and said, look, I'll try this out. But I wasn't, during the HDIP, when I was doing the HDIP, I found that in, I suppose, in agreement with a number of others, we weren't at all happy about the sort of programme that we were offered. We felt it was very didactic, very unreflective, didn't provoke us to reflect and didn't stimulate our own learning. It was very much a content-driven programme. So a number of us got together. We began to organise alternative lectures during that year. So in this respect, I think I probably was an unlikely enough candidate for the profession. We
What did the alternative lectures consist of, and how did you go about organising them?
Well, what happened was that we consulted among friends who had graduated actually quite recently and enlisted a few of them to give lectures. It seems really strange looking back on it. But I made very good friends with some people at that time, including the chap who gave lectures in philosophy. Jodon Joe subsequently taught in St. Pat's and Drumcondra. Well, actually, he was teaching in Pat's and Drumcondra as a first-year lecturer at that time. But there was also, curiously enough, a psychologist in the Department of Education, Padraig Cruillich, who gave lectures in psychology. John Horgan, who was the education editor in the Irish Times at that time, he came along, and several other people. We used to go to the embassies as well and get film on education systems in different countries. I remember picking up stuff on Japanese system, German system, others, and then with we just got the use of projection equipment and showed these videos and discussed them. But essentially, we were trying to maybe provoke a more reflective approach. Probably cost me a fair bit as well. Over the years, my results in the HDIP were not stellar, let's put it like that, but we struggled through. There was one occasion during the year, actually, we decided, just as a challenge, that we would replicate the entire HDIP programme for 1 week. And we published a manifesto at that time as well. I still have a copy of that manifesto, and it's kind of interesting to read now, you know.
And did your lecturers know that this was going on in the background?
They did, actually. It created quite a stir in the media. And I'd say it caused a lot of embarrassment to the School of Education at the time. I mean, typically we would start... on a typical evening, we would go into the lecture a few minutes before the lecturer arrived, and we'd say, there's an alternative lecture taking place on philosophy in room 111 for those of you who wish to attend.
At the same time as the regular lecture.
Yeah, that sort of thing. We did that. And then another tactic we had was we used ask questions during the lecture. Now, we had been, if you can imagine, sort of in a course on ethics, we were asked, we'd be told, well, it's about questioning, about asking questions, but you weren't allowed to ask questions. So we started to ask questions. Of course, this really caused mayhem. And what just was one of those things you did, you know.
Did it ultimately bring about any change to the programme?
Not in our year, but it did certainly the following year. And 2 years later, the programme was entirely changed. And oddly, the person whom we had brought in as an alternative lecturer in philosophy became the mainstream lecturer in philosophy 2 years later. That was Joe Don, when the St. Patrick's College in Drumcondra was actually given responsibility for the HDIP course for a year. And so that was, anyway, that was one of the things I did, you know.
And then after that year, presumably, you became a teacher.
Yeah, I began teaching down in Kilbeggan in Westmeath. And again, that was a sort of turbulent enough time because I think I suffered just from a complete sort of naivety. I began to organise sort of a youth club in the area, and this drew me into conflict with the parish priest, and that caused the mother and father of a row that actually blew up in the media as well. And in the national media, believe it or not, it was all over the local papers, photographs, everything else. And then one Sunday, the whole thing blew up as a colour, well, not a colour, pardon me, sort of a full photograph, half-page spread in the Sunday Independent.
And what was the problem?
The problem was getting access. Lots of groups in the community had the same difficulties I had getting access to the use of the parochial hall. So a little campaign was launched, and that caused rows. But at the same time in the school, I was also having difficulties because the I was teaching Irish. Now, I wasn't a graduate in Irish, but I had grown up speaking Irish, and I had been taught by my father, who was a most remarkable teacher. And so I began to use his approaches, you know, say I'd encourage the children to write their own little dialogues and act them out. Now, I did wonders for the Royal Irish, but it was noisy. And then I used to get castigated at staff meetings by the Reverend Mother for my recreation classes. And this all sort of built up anyway to a point where at the end of the year I was asked to leave. So I refused to go. I said, you're going to...
Were you in a permanent job?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. I didn't even know this. This is all sort of very naive of me, I have to say, you know. And when I spoke to the union, they said, there's nothing we can do. You're on probation. But I said, well, I'm not going. They're going to have to push me. So anyway, between one thing and another, the nuns relented. And but the funny thing is this. Now, the reason I tell the story is this, that I, as well as teaching sort of, you know, in my own way, I mean, I was very committed to what I was doing. And two things happened during that year that sort of only afterwards maybe gave a bit more insight into what was happening. First of all, while I was being chastised for my recreation classes, Institute Changali at the Éireann were doing a survey of attitudes towards the language at the time nationally. And they surveyed actual classes of children sort of around the country here and there. They chose one of my classes. I didn't know this was going on, but the results of the study in Kilbeggan suggest the kids were so good and so positive, they thought there was a little brack gaeltacht in the area. You see? So then the other thing that happened was this. When I came back in September of my second year, sort of chastened so on, The Interchurch results came out, and the kids I had been teaching for Interchurch did spectacularly well. See, and I actually didn't know what I'd done either. You know, there was something about this that I actually found intriguing, that you can do very well without knowing what you're doing. And it's an image I've retained, that you can't know what you're doing. You earnestly engage, but you cannot know the outcomes.
After a second year in Kilbeggan, Seamus was 23 years old. He resigned from his teaching position and travelled to Spain to work as a teacher of English, where he stayed for 18 months. On his return, he subbed in St Mary's in Rathmines before doing an M.Ed. in Trinity College Dublin. He then took up a teaching position in Coolock, and it was from there that he successfully applied for the position of Director of Blackrock Education Centre in 1981. All of these experiences were to influence Seamus's approach to his work in Blackrock. But another important influence on him was that of his father, a primary teacher.
My father would have been very unusual in that he was, I suppose, a teacher for his time in some ways. He he combined a number of, dimensions in his personality and his professional life. I grew up in an English-speaking area in Dunfanaghy and Donegal, but my father taught through Irish, and this was a personal commitment on his part. He taught, I thought, and still think, extraordinarily well. He devoted huge energy to creating resources, and he was an early adopter of communications technology. He was a very adept typist, both in Irish and English, and I'm thinking of the Irish in the old script as well as the new script. It was a matter of great pride to him that he had actually persuaded the typewriter manufacturer to facilitate him in putting, enabling sort of the bulcha, the shevu, on, for instance, a capital T in the old script or the capital G. But
did he have a typewriter for the old script?
He did, yeah. He did. He had a typewriter for the old script. Unfortunately, I don't have it. I'm very sorry that I don't, because he created a lot of learning materials. Quite a few I have here. These would have been used for teaching Irish language, teaching song, teaching. He composed his own poetry and taught songs that he had written himself. He composed little stories that were based on the local area. He wrote a history of Ireland as well, which he typed up, duplicated on the old Gestetner, and bound. He had maybe 10 or 12 copies of this that he then was handed on from one class, one sort of senior group of students, to another, because in the words of one former student in Donegal, in Donegal in the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, poverty was endemic. I remember vividly sitting beside somebody on the steps of the school one day, and we were great pals. Next day he was gone, emigrated, never saw him again. The emigration was just a fact of life. People came and went to Scotland in particular. But the only way out of poverty was education. And to get education, you had to get a scholarship. So my father prepared people for scholarship examinations, but it wasn't the grind school. It wasn't sort of the grad grind of Dickens. It was something much more humane. So he created his learning materials, and people worked from actual books he created and learnt. I suppose a great deal that went to their benefit.
And I mean, I'm looking at some of the books here. You've kept a few copies of them. One thing I'm wondering about is, did he make them because the people couldn't afford the textbooks that were available, or did he think that the textbooks that were available just weren't good enough to do what he wanted to do with them?
There weren't texts, you know. I mean, there was a very limited amount of mainstream stilted material, but it wasn't. And yes, we would have studied. I remember reading sort of books in primary school that would have been published by Follands or whomsoever, Gil Macmillan, or the educational company typically. But they were very marginal. In my recollection, I have to say, we were mostly using materials he'd created, because maybe his own imagination sort of fed that as well, you know.
And looking back at his work and looking at your own work now, how would you evaluate his influence on you professionally?
I suppose I never thought very much about it until it was relatively recently. And I think that at the end of the day, his influence was very, very much in my subconscious. But he would have been heavily involved in the early 1970s. He was involved in teacher professional development before it was either, as I say, popular or profitable. The department would have commissioned him to contribute to teaching teachers in the area of sort of methodology, particularly in the area of Irish. So we would have been involved in sort of courses in Maynooth during the summer. He also contributed, I think, because we lived in Donegal, and there's a cul-de-sac of Conan the Gaelic. He was involved in that. So he would have been invited to give training courses in, you know, across the north as well, you know. So he was actually involved in teacher professional development before I was, you know. And well, that would have been very unusual for somebody his age. But more than anything, I think that I suppose what influenced me, the way in which he influenced me, was just the extraordinary thoroughness and commitment that he brought to bear on what he did, you know.
And you've mentioned your own interest in Joyce. How did that come about?
I don't know, but it's something that's been a preoccupation. Well, it's been an interest for many, many years. I remember as a youngster at school picking up a Mercier paperback of the Thomas Davis lectures entitled The Joyce We Knew, and had to do with a series of radio interviews transcribed on interviews by people who would have known Joyce in his Dublin times, but mostly when he lived abroad. And I just thought he was very interesting. And then I began then, it was much, much later that I tried to read Ulysses, and like everybody else, had great difficulty with it and abandoned it a few times before. In early 1982...
Which was the centenary of Joyce's birth.
Correct, and there was a lot of activity that year. And I realised that, I was working on the Avenue. This is when the teacher centre at the time was in Carisford. Joyce had lived in Carisford Avenue for a bit. So I said, oh, maybe this is an omen. So I organised a reading circle on Joyce and got one of the lecturers in Carisford to sort of lead a group of us through Ulysses. And that got me through it. First time, and I became fascinated. So myself and a pal had great fun then on Bloomsday that year, because we actually knew, you know, we had read the entire, so we knew what was going on, we understood, and that was a great bit of fun. And then I just subsequently began to sort of read it again and again, and I always found that there's a group of people who, like myself, want to read it and have balked. Usually at episode or chapter 3, which is a particularly difficult one, who if they, and these people, if they had a little bit of assistance, as I had, you know, get into it, it's great fun, and it's like a lot of things that are hard to do, learning a piano, for instance, you know. Once you put the effort in, the rewards are considerable, and it's an enduring fascination, frankly. And I think more and more as I read around it that, as Declan Kybert says, that Ulysses is a book about living well. It's about somebody who's pretty insignificant in this, in the scale of things in Dublin, Leopold Bloom. Sort of a marginalised, very modest person who has a fairly precarious hold on the material sort of side of life, irregular income, that sort of thing. but who's really decent, who deals with a lot of setbacks, but is cheerful and positive. And the he's celebrated by Joyce as the great hero, Odysseus or Ulysses. So the heroic is the job of getting through the day. And I find that quite instructive, quite inspirational, really, you know. Just doing a good job today. You know, that's really what Ulysses is about, you know, and doing it cheerfully and keeping the chin up. So I think that's one of the things I like about it.
We've talked a lot about your work in the BlackRock Education Centre. You've now retired. What are your plans for retirement?
Well, would you believe, I used to kid my mother when she was very elderly, and she too had been a teacher, that she had thwarted me in the only career I actually chose for myself. And the only career I chose actually was to be a carpenter. As a kid, I was fascinated by woodwork. It's always been a hobby, but I haven't really been able to indulge it. So what I'm doing, I've actually been accepted on a furniture making course. So I want to train actually is in fine woodwork. That's one objective. Second thing I'm doing is that starts in the home. That's pretty full time course, and I'm very fortunate there's the course being offered locally. But I suppose on the one hand, I mean, I have always wanted to be a carpenter, but as well as the other things I'm doing. But I think too that as a general statement in education, that we do neglect working with our hands. I think that's something I've felt for a while. I love manual work. I think manual work's good for the head. I think it's much neglected. So that's another dimension to my carpentry. I'll be thinking about it as well. I will be a reflective practitioner in that field as well. The other thing, I'm learning French at the moment as well. I like languages. I holiday a lot in France, so I'm learning French. I'll probably pick up the piano as well again. I'm in this curious state where I've done grade 3, I think 3 times. I got as far as grade 5 the last time. And then something interrupts. I go back to study or something like that. I don't have enough time to do everything, you know.
That was Seamus Cannon, who retired in December as director of BlackRock Education Centre. On next week's programme, we'll hear about how Seamus approached his work as director of BlackRock Education Centre and about his views on professional development for teachers. But that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can email us at InsideEducation@DublinCityFM.ie. Thanks to my guests, Fred Boss and Seamus Cannon. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.